stop.
I'm not going to do that.
The following conversation took place in the studio of Werker at the Rijksacademie on March 30th, 2022. What does culture mean for the city in the context of independent spaces? What is the role of counterculture for both the city as well as for the field of arts and culture? As cultural producers that have a strong affiliation with autonomy and or have their heritage in the history of Dutch squatting, the following talk focuses on the role of independent culture in Amsterdam. Does that squatting heritage still come into play with regards to its current programming? And what is the urgency for non-institutional cultural spaces in Amsterdam? Wouter Stoet is an artist, designer, and activist. By adapting and appropriating modern, contemporary cartographic techniques, he aims to question the authority that decides what is and what is not in focus. Besides his individual practice, he collaborates in communal projects, such as Radio Voorwaarts, a radio platform for underground culture in Amsterdam. And more recently, he's been affiliated with Verdedig Noord, an activist group fighting against gentrification in the Amsterdam borough of Noord, and Mokum Kracht, a new generation of squatters. Sjoerd Stolk is the programmer of Onafhankelijk Cultureel Centrum Innit, better known as OCCI. Situated in a beautiful building complex which was squatted in 1984 and legalized in 1992, the OCCI has since developed into a unique social center for alternative music and other arts. In its 20-plus years of existence, OCCI has been run largely by volunteers, allowing the venue for diverse programming while remaining affordable to attend. Now the volunteers come and go, but for the past 10 years, on any given day, chances are high that you'll find Sjoerd Stolk at the OCCI, either behind his computer, the mixing desk, or the bar. Alte Jong is a visual artist working from his studio in Amsterdam. With colorful and very physical sculptures, he wants to create an inclusive art world, one that opens and connects itself to the viewer and looks ahead. He's also one of the founders of W139, a presentation and production space for contemporary art. It was established in 1979 and celebrates thus over 40 years of providing artists time and space for free explorations in the heart of Amsterdam. It has a long history as a supporter of artistic and social resistance, as a platform for dialogue and encounter, as a facilitator and a collaboration partner for radical imagination and inclusion.
So the conversations are structured quite loosely, also because we want people to walk through the city and, like you would have a conversation with a friend when you walk through the city. So it's not very structured. We're also very welcome to interact with one another. Mm-hmm. But I think I would like to start by having you introduce yourselves and then maybe point out, we have a map laying here, what the space is that we're going to talk about today and where it's located.
My name is Sjoerd. I'm involved with a cultural independent venue, part of a bigger collective called the Binnenpret. And the venue is called OCCI. We're located in the Amsterdam South, Amstelveenseweg, just near the south entrance of the Vondelpark. So, Amstelveenseweg 134. And we have two buildings. And the other building goes from the Schiphol-Havenstraat to the Eerste Schiphol-straat. In the corner, I'm involved since early 2000, so roughly 20 years now. So I've seen the area change a lot, and I've seen Amsterdam change. But,
How long has the OCCI been operating as the OCCI?
Today we celebrate our 30th anniversary.
Congratulations. Today?
March. No, we're going to celebrate the whole year. But this is the first month that we have no restrictions and we can come together. So tonight. 20th of March. Tonight we're going to celebrate a bit with the volunteers and people involved close to Oki. And then from next month on, we do concerts or special events or more kind of. I've been digging into archives lately a lot. That was also because of the pandemic, I guess. 20 years, the Binnenpret itself is squatted in 1984, so it's a bit longer. Dag van de Onrust, people from the 80s will probably know what I'm talking about, but it was like a big call out to the whole city, all the people in town, just go out and squat whatever you can. After a huge eviction in the city center, close to the central station, big squat was evicted, Rijers. And then Dag van de Onrust was the start. They opened two buildings on the Amstelveenseweg, and found out that it was way bigger than they expected, and they needed a lot of help. And within a few weeks, most people that wanted to do something and did something in the Bijers came and started the restaurants, workspaces, and cultural instelling. Oki was a little bit later. 92. That was also kind of the time that the Binnenpret got legalized. Got an erfpacht contract with the city for 30 years, so fixed price for the ground, because the city still owns the ground. But the Binnenpret as a collective, we have two buildings and we maintain everything, the UI in our own.
We own the building?
No. Well, we have to take care of it. The owner is the vereniging is the owner, but we cannot sell it, we cannot do anything.
Oh, yeah, you have a corporation.
A corporation.
So you are your own building corporation.
Yeah, in a way, we are free space with our own contracts and rent contract to the corporation, and we can't bring it on the market or whatever. And also, we reopened the Erfpacht contract a few years ago, and we have now a contract to infinity, so we can't pay the same what we pay now until next. So it's not going to be
inflation, no nothing.
It's not going to be any object,
speculation object.
Yeah, it's not ever going to be back on the market as long as the Binnenpret Corporation has enough people to keep it going.
And there's always a new influx of people interested in
definitely
participating in the space.
The venue is on the Amstelveenseweg, but we also in the back there's still workspaces. There is a restaurant. There is a theater. There's a recording studio, and I probably forgot some.
What does Oki stand for?
Yeah, Onafhankelijk Cultureel Centrum. In it.
In it. I love the in it every time.
I think it's a part of the British inheritance. There was a lot of squatters back in the days from England and Scotland that were involved with the Binnenpret from the start. So there's also an info shop called Bollocks. And the Oki's always had a bar, the Binnenpret, always had a bar called Kasbah. That was where we now have the kitchen and office that we sometimes use for meetings. And downstairs, is it garage? Garage, autosleutelen, fixing cars, till now venue. Yeah. It's been changed in this 40 years.
Yeah. I'm going to move to Ott. I'm sitting next to you, Stuart. Alt, where are you in the city?
I live in the city and I work on different places. But I'm a sculptor and I live in Amsterdam on the same spot for more than 40 years. That's in the center, close to the Nieuwmarkt. Although the first 20 years I never entered the Nieuwmarkt because there was the other side, you know, already very close to the Warmoestraat. But and we as squatters saw the Nieuwmarkt always as the TV people lived there and were more rich people. So it was kind of like a different neighborhood.
And the Newmarket was like the elitist.
Yeah, to a small, yeah.
And
yeah.
You were on the Barmstedt. Maybe to explain, the Barmstedt is a small street running from
Central Station. Not that small.
No, it's very long.
Yeah, it's not that wide.
It's in a sense, it's a long street running from Central.
Yeah, it's not like a Brooklyn or the...
No.
It has not been a canal in the past. So it's actually a dike. So it's almost part of Amsterdam, the Warmingstraat, you know. And on the other side, we have the Nieuwe Dijk. And in between was the Amstel, you know. It would run from the Central Station to the Dam Square. So and I live on the Warmingstraat, and then in a small side street, that's the St. Amersstraat. It's close to the Old Church. Old Church is also a special place, because that's the only place in Amsterdam where it's a little higher. And because it's built on the only sand plate which was available. So, you know, all the other parts of Amsterdam, you need to dig 20 meters before you have the first sand plate. And I lived there for more than 40 years. So I started living there when it was still a dangerous neighborhood, you know, in the Warmingstraat, and also the St. Annestraat was very dangerous. Every night you would have robberies and shootings, whatever. So it was really rough, and I wasn't used to that because I wasn't born in Amsterdam. So in 79 we squatted the 139, Warmingstraat 139. But we also squatted the whole neighborhood. There was the called the Blauwe Laken, one of the oldest part of Amsterdam. There was like 60 houses, so they were from the bank or of the
very luxury
departments. Yes, now very luxury. But at that time it wasn't that luxury because it was going bankrupt almost. And they owned that whole block because they wanted to tear it down and make a garage there and some offices.
It seems like the whole Amsterdam in the 70s and 80s was just destined to be a parking lot.
Yeah, but you cannot imagine that whole block was almost empty. Few people still lived there, old people.
But the block of the Bijenkorf was... No, the Bijenkorf was never empty.
No, the Bijenkorf was still there.
Yeah, right.
Just behind.
But you know the parking garage of the Bijenkorf? Yeah, behind that whole block.
Right, yeah. Okay,
from the Condomerie next to the W139, mm-hmm. and then to the Krasnopolsky.
Yeah.
And the other corner is the Winston Hotel,
yeah.
or
yeah.
St. Christopher. And then next to the St. Prophet is the St. Annester. That's where I live.
Mm-hmm.
And then so... In the back, there's small alleys. We have some gardens. So if I go from the back, I can, you know, enter into the W139 or... So the inside of the block is still very silent. You know, it's quiet.
Mm.
So we squatted the W139. And interesting story was we didn't have to squat it because we got the key from the company who was renovating the bank of at that time. That they had to quit because all the stuff from the Bijenkorf, which was taken out, was stored in the W139. So we started stealing in the weekends, you know, pipes and like tubes and everything, because you could go in the back on the roofs. And the guy who was renovating the bank knew it, you know, it was a younger guy, and he didn't care that much, as long as it was too much. And so a certain day he said, we're going to leave, so you want to have the keys?
Wow.
So we bought some cheap apple cake at the HEMA in the new day and said, yeah. And so that's how we got the building. And then we went to the Bijenkorf and we, on the office in Amstelveen, I think, and we slept with them a little bit in the office. And so...
Threatened them with what?
Well, in the time, what I said was... Mm. Way more violent, so they were aware that we were with a lot of people close to their shop, and their big windows. You only have to mention that, and then they were like, okay. But anyway, they didn't know what to do with the building. So from there we started, but the houses were really not like easy to squat, you know, there was no water, there was no electricity, there was nothing, you know. So. We brought in artists all the time, and they started to renovate on their own all these houses, much which were like older, mostly older than 100 years, because a lot of them are now monuments. And also part of the W1CNI is a monument. So from there we started, and then to go really quick, we got a contract, everybody got a contract there from the first, we convinced the town government to buy the whole block, and that Schaefer did that, you know, the famous.
Jan Schaefer.
Yeah.
And Luke in Bonn.
Yeah.
Fucking bullshit.
And I met him a few times, and so he bought it, and then in the contract was also the way it was going to be renovated. That took a longer time. And in the contract was also, you could buy the building if you wanted it. So, because they didn't know what to do with the big space, so we could buy it. But that took also, of course, a long history before we...
And in the end, you did end up buying the space.
Yeah.
And can I ask for how much? Do you still remember?
Yeah, it was an interesting negotiation. I went with a guy who had some knowledge about how to buy, not a real estate guy, just a guy like me, but had more knowledge about numbers. So we went to the town government we sat there, and they said, yeah, we want to buy the building. I said, okay, you can buy it. And they said, well, how much is it? And they said, $500,000, guilders. And the guy next to me said, well, no, it's not more worth than a guilder because it's totally ruined. So he said, let's say €300,000. And then the guy said, yeah, okay. So in like half an hour, we were outside, and he told me, said, well, that was a quick earning, €200,000. So we bought it for that. But the renovation was more than like $1 million.
Steep amount. We'll come to how you finance that later. I want to move to Walter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So my name is Walter, and I work as a graphic designer and a filmmaker. I was born in Amsterdam, and I still live here. Currently in Noord, which is not on the map on our table, but it should be here, close to the last subway station. And I graduated at the Sandberg Institute, the Masters of the Rietveld, 2 years ago. And it was, yeah, I think over there I realized that the fact that I'm from Amsterdam was special in this context, which was, I guess when I came there, I was intimidated in a good way by all the international students there. And it was a bit like, oh, what's my narrative? But then from the whole institute, I was the only one from Amsterdam, which is interesting, in an institute that is located in Amsterdam. And throughout my studies, I was thinking about Amsterdam a lot, and mostly about the current housing crisis, because I never lived somewhere in Amsterdam apart from the place where I grew up with my parents for more than 2 years.
Where did you grow up?
I was born in the Pijp, and I grew up in New Slota, and then in Bad Verdorp, which is not strictly Amsterdam, but like the suburb. And then afterwards, I lived mostly in Noord for 8 years now. That was Antikraak. So when I moved out of my parents' house, I lived Antikraak for a while because it seemed, or it was really cheap. It was actually for free for 2 years. But in the area was now a Garage Noord skate cafe. There was like
Hamerkwartier,
yeah. And then they said, like, oh, do you really want to live here? Like, yeah, it's nice here. And then, okay, here's the key. Make sure it doesn't get squatted. I think when I was living there, I started to see the aggression of gentrification, but also city planning. That there's this building in Noord called North Orleans, which is already using this like almost colonial narrative of that Noord is empty and yet to be discovered. And it was supposed to be student housing, but there's not a border on the maximum amount of student housing. So now these are like designer lofts that are €1,200 a month for 20 square meters. So obviously not for students. And then I also got kicked out of this Antikraak house because after 2 years you obtain tenant rights. Yeah. And then they don't want that, of course. So then after 2 years I got kicked out. And I think that was the moment that I started to look for other alternatives for living. And squatting was always something I was interested in. The counterculture aspect, like Hotel 301 was the place where I had my like first beers when I was 15, I guess, because they wouldn't ask for ID over there. And then you had the Mobiele Eenheid, another squat in the Damekwartier as well, which is affected for some years already.
But yeah, after this, after I had to move out of this Antikraak, I was also involving it in my work a little bit more and thinking about it, like, okay, how could we reclaim the city center mostly? Because the city center really became this place with a lot of Nutella shops and inaccessible for a lot of friends of mine, I think. You live there, of course, and I have some friends who sometimes live there, but it's never for long periods. Like, I don't have any friends who have, like, fixed contracts there. It's always in the periphery. And then there's this Hotel Mokum, or it was called Hotel Marnix, which was it's an empty hotel. It's empty again on the Marnixstraat.
I psychopathed 2 days before the squatting action. I was looking at it again. Still empty.
Yeah, now there's like a tourism ticket sticker on the window, and they painted the facade.
Well, probably they're gonna buy it because those are the richest guy.
Yeah, it's owned by this
tourism British ticket.
No, it's owned by the hotel. But anyways, yeah, this place was squatted in October, which was a great action. It was during the ADEF, which is like an which stands for Amsterdam Danst Ergens Voor, and it's like,
it's an alternative event to Amsterdam.
A reaction to the commercial clubs. It's a street rave basically, and every year it's a parade through the city, and this year it was coincidentally through the morning staff. And when all the ravers like walked through the morning staff, there was like this banner drop that really big said Pak Mokum terug, which is also part of her name, Hotel Mokum, and Mokum means Amsterdam. It's a Yiddish word, and it came from the Yiddish community in Amsterdam. They would refer to Amsterdam as Mokum. But it also means,
I think,
place, right?
Yeah, or home? My town.
My town.
Jerusalem,
right.
Was their second home for the Jewish people.
Ah, right. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that's what I heard.
I think that's a very valid explanation. I like.
Yeah.
My town.
My town. Yeah, exactly. And then Pokemon. Yeah, exactly. That's it, basically. And then we changed the name Hotel Marnix to Hotel Mokum. Unfortunately, it only lasted for 6 weeks. We got evicted because of fire safety. It's like it's five floors, and then all the floors, apart from the ground floor, are made of wood, like a lot of buildings in Amsterdam. But this building was really unsafe, apparently. Yeah, we didn't get the chance to negotiate or to talk about it. We really made sure, like, we didn't do events on the top floors. We were aware that it's like wood and that you shouldn't have a lot of smoking people or partying people. We were also not sure how much the floors could take, but our events were on the ground floor. And then we got this speed eviction, basically. So we had to, we got evicted within 3 days. Yeah, it's sad because it's just like over in 3 days. But as long as it lasted, it was a great place. I think it was really, for me, it was great because it was just a place where you would go to and meet friends or friend of friends or people that become friends. When we did events, it was constantly completely packed. Like what did we do? We did like political cafes where we would have debates on the ground floor. We did a big exhibition. That was the first time we opened the floors for an exhibition. Also really handy because before everyone helped cleaning up and then there was the exhibition. Yeah, and I think what really inspired me of these things is that the boundaries are not really set yet. So if you do an exhibition, what I'm used to is there's a certain scene exhibiting or certain people, there are certain expectations because the place is already established. And here we just did an open call and we said, if you have some work, you can just bring it. And the great thing was that it was a combination of really established artists, emerging artists, and people that like to make drawings. And that felt really refreshing for me in Amsterdam. I don't think that's happening so much, not on such a scale.
I think that actually touches the heart of what I want to talk about, is the role of culture in Amsterdam and how the places that you are involved with basically form what I always see, like this hummus layer. And I think no city can flourish without a hummus layer. It feeds the cultural scene. But maybe we should talk a little bit then about what does culture, independent culture mean, or what does counterculture mean? How do you fill it in? Maybe short.
For us, it's basically there's no boundaries or hierarchy between the artist and the audience. So this is really like, and it, you keep the prices low, so most people can afford and come. And also, everything is done by volunteers. It makes it more like a part of the community. And when I got there like 20 years ago, there were still like squats in the area. So the people that living in the squats also use the hockey for repetition or info events. And that's kind of gone. There's not much happening in the area anymore. So it's more like a venue nowadays with a very international program. So we once got a review, like I said, Oki gives voice to the all the dissident voices of the four corners of the globe. So it's really like international. And for me, the most important thing is the combination of the info, the entertainment, and the music that gives a little. And then, keep it open as much as possible.
And how do you finance the groups if they come from Indonesia?
If they come, then what comes in at the door goes out to the artist, and because we keep.
So the contract is there.
That's basically it. And then, we do it for such a long time. I mean, I also organize sometimes like a dance event. There's less money involved, but a lot of money comes in from the bar or whatever.
Yeah.
So with that, you always like shift it a little bit. Move. So in the end, we want to break even, not more. So in the end of the year, you break even, and then you hope that everybody got a piece of the pie, and enough to make things happening. And
if it happened that it not break even, what do you do then?
Not as long as I'm there.
Okay.
But also, since 10 years, we do have structural funding from AFCA.
Which is the Amsterdam Fund for the Arts.
It's now the second time for 4 years, so we have it now.
So it's like a structural...
Yeah, a four-year, and it kind of came because the Stadsdelen don't exist anymore.
Which is the neighborhood.
The neighborhood, and we also have a kids program 2-3 days a week that's really done by for the 0 to 12-year-old kids, 2-3 days a week, workshops or party or combination of things.
What workshop? Music also?
We also do paint... action paint,
throwing
Fenner Pommer. But it can also be today we're gonna work with herbs and food you find in the Vondelpark and just stuff with kids. Really basic. Of course, we go to the schools, so there's also a lot of buiten schools opvang. It's less, but it's kids from the school, from the area.
From that area.
Yeah.
Which is actually because it's based in the south part of Amsterdam. It's neighboring to the Vondelpark, which is one of the most expensive areas in Amsterdam.
Yeah, but the Schinkelbuurt is like, we are more connected to the Schinkelbuurt, the new west. But of course, also that is not what it used to be. Like 20 years ago, the street, the eerste Schinkelstraat, tweede Schinkelstraat, derde Schinkelstraat, were all garage boxes. Was a lot of working class people. Now it's all gone. And also the old folks, our neighbors that lived there since the 20s and 30s, they all moved out to New West. It's more, their houses are very, very valuable, and they can buy twice as big or something quiet outside. So the whole area is definitely on the, but it's also,
has it meant a shift in both your audience, but also how the neighborhood responds to your location?
After the pandemic, now we're in a fight with all the neighbors. It's just reopening, and we have a big problem now. And,
and you've been open for like 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly.
And already everybody's complaining.
Yeah. What the fuck are you doing in a neighborhood where people live? You cannot make noise after midnight. So now we are part of this, what we just said, right to live in a city, and people are like...
Yeah. And are these neighbors, the neighbors that already live there? How long do you name it? Right,
yeah.
Because that.
But now they bought the house.
They own it.
Before that, they were renters, or they moved in, and now they own the place. It's that bought it from the original people that moved out, and now they want everything to be quiet or accepted within blah blah blah. And they say that music has to be something for the Bijlmer or the Slaughter Plus.
Right.
You cannot have bands playing in an area where people, and some of these people are like musicians or artists themselves. It's just really, really fucking weird. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something that we have.
Do you see that as well? The shift from, art and contemporary art, performing arts, visual arts, moving from the city center out to other places. And is that a problem?
Well, what I see is already for 20 years that there's no influx of young artists and musicians and dancers, whatever, because you cannot find a house. So. And I remember like 20 or 30 years ago, I talked to the town government about this problem, and then still the idea was, well, then you go to Rotterdam, That was a long time for all the people and say, well, if you don't like it here, you go to Rotterdam. For people who don't know, that's the
kind also of still a lot of young musicians moved to Rotterdam past 5-6 years.
Everybody from the Rietveld also, move to Rotterdam, The Hague.
Yeah.
All the young artists who come and work in my studio, they come from Arnhem or Rotterdam, never from Amsterdam. It's really difficult to find anybody in Amsterdam, a young artist who can help me out in the studio. But we, kind of like when we squatted the Dublin once and I don't know how, but like all the people, we knew somehow that the whole city center was going to change. So that's why we really put a lot of energy in buying the building. And we didn't want to buy it for ourselves, because we always said we want to buy it for the city. So it was never involved something from the ego, like artists, oh, we want to become famous, we have this space, we want to make a famous gallery. That was never the case. And that was really a good base. So, and also the structure, like how we have the directors and organized everything, is always based on the ideas of the artists, never on the ideas of the curators or directors. So the artists are always first. And of course now we are in a difficult position, because also the Amsterdam Fund for the Arts, the AFCA, didn't give us the subsidy the last time, 2 years ago, because they said you're only there for the tourists and you're not involved in US or whatever. So it's the opposite.
They actually want you to be involved in the areas around it. Surrounding
Amsterdam, and
instead
also,
of being involved in the city center.
But that is because the people who are in those commissions, they never spend the whole night in the Warmuswag or in our space, so they don't know what's going on. Mm. And whereas we see it as very important, to have young tourists coming into our space, because for them it's a complete surprise then to find in. For them, expensive city, close to the Dam Square, a few minutes, such an enormous alternative space. And I do have the experience also that, for example, people come in and they're like really surprised. You can talk to them. I once talked to a truck driver from England, who just by accident strolled in and then was surprised. Bought a poster, and so it's really important. It's not like we are only focused on what a lot of these spaces, like in the East or the Apple. They're mainly for, although of course for the AFCA they say, well, we also do education, we do this for the neighborhood, but mainly they're just focused on their website and the Instagram on in the art world. It's very exclusive.
Mm-hmm.
All the talks and all the readings and everything they do is very, which is good, because that's part of the art world, which also is going to develop into a new direction, because the world has to change, is changing.
Yeah.
But we are mostly focused on the neighborhood, because still a lot of artists live there.
I wanted to say, but still even for young artists, like for instance now, it's March and we actually had an open month where there was an open call and people could just submit over 200 artists and collectors.
250.
Yeah, submitted plans to host a night or maybe to put up their own show.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see how many people or how it gave space to so many young artists still, you know.
Not only young artists.
No, and older artists. Well, I was actually part of it.
Yeah.
I'm old. But the nice thing, I think, is about, you said, you know, you're doing it for the neighborhood and then you have this occasional
tourist.
Yeah,
and the neighborhood is also the tourist.
Yes, exactly. Well, and it's a combination of both. And it's still like a place in the city center. And I think that is the most important thing, where you can go. And it's actually the only place where you could meet everybody.
Yeah.
Where you meet the accidental tourist that walks in, where you meet the, you know, the fine art retreat student with someone from the neighborhood living there. Whereas like if you look at exactly as you said, at something like the Oppel, which is a beautiful place, but it is very much catered to one small scene. I think, Wouter, is that also a reason why you think that Malcolm, Hotel Malcolm or Malcolm Kracht, as they're now called,
mm-hmm.
Are focusing on in and around the city center? Because actually recently, the organization behind it squatted a new building on the Kinkerstraat, which is also quite central in Amsterdam.
Yeah, definitely. I think I think most people consider that center as well, right? Or most
like
friends.
Everything that is within the vicinity of, well, which is inside the ring, the highway surrounding Amsterdam. We still
right. Yeah, exactly. This was like a merge of so Hotel Malcolm, Kinder van Malcolm, which is another group of squatters and some other individuals, and it's a former laundromat in the Kinkerstraat. The Kinkerstraat used to be a working class neighborhood, and then you have the Jan Pieter Heijstraat on the corner, which is one of the most heavily gentrified areas in Amsterdam, I think, at the moment. Yeah, with a huge other Patrick is also squatted. But this place, I think we always try to do something in the center because, we want to reclaim Pak Malcolm terug. It's like the idea to reclaim the center. So Hotel Malcolm was in the Marnixstraat, and we want to have cheap culture. It's like the area with the Leidse Plein and all the theaters, which is, let's say, expensive culture, not accessible for everyone. And we wanted to counter this with free culture. Mostly our events were free on donation. I think what's really interesting, there's this new current that people have certain ideas with streets and who should be there, who should live there. So I know it's in the Marnixstraat that most people that are in their 50s, 60s understand what squatting is. They knew it from back in the day, and you don't need to explain what you're doing. It was mostly people my age in their 30s that would say I don't disagree with squatting, but not in this street because this is an expensive street. And it's really like this idea, like same with the municipality is saying, like, if you want to have alternative culture, fine, we all like that, but do it here.
Yeah.
And then it's seen as this attraction, like, oh yeah, maybe this person, if he feels a bit funky.
Anymore, no.
What do you mean?
No, it's not. It's not the point of view of the city.
Of the city.
No, because like for the W139 and the whole block, you know, we once squatted.
Yeah.
All the ground floor, working spaces are now studios, because when we renovated it, we were all involved in the renovation, so we had a big
mm-hmm.
say in how it was renovated. And now, we convinced the municipality that they have to support the W139 because we don't have enough money, so they spend a little money on the W139. But next to that, I made a plan. I told the city, you have to buy all the studios back
mm-hmm.
because they're from the corporation now. And the corporation is just raising the rents. You know, they were like 300 euros a month.
Yeah.
And now they're pushing everybody out, and it's going to 1,700 a month. So it's still in one hand now. And they agreed, you know. So the city says...
City agreed.
The studios downstairs in the whole block, so it's about 30 studios.
Yeah.
And so I said, well, I wrote a letter to Van Carlson. I said, well, now is the time to buy it back because you want to bring Amsterdam back to the Amsterdam people. And so they hired a really fancy real estate guy, a young guy, a nice guy. First time I met him, I had a coffee with him, and then after, I think 10 minutes, he said, well, you have to know, I'm really a liberal guy, you know, I'm right wing. He saw me as a kind of like, then I kissed or whatever. So it's really, but he's good, you know, on that level, because he does the talking with the corporation. And the corporation is now agreeing to kind of like investigate the idea. We are going to buy all the studios back